There ain't nothing more depressing than a pine tree, gussied up with candy canes and balls. Those carolers have kept me up for hours. It's Merry Christmas seeping through my walls. Now, I'm no Wiccan commie nut or nothing, but there's one damn holiday that I can't stand. It ain't Halloween or Thanksgiving or even April Fool's, but it'll surely make a fool out of every man. Ha! If I ain't drunk, then it ain't Christmas. You know where to stick those jingle bells. If I ain't hammered, it ain't Hanukkah. And all you motherfuckers go to hell. If I ain't cockeyed, it ain't Kwanzaa. Joy to the world, Jack and Coops. If I ain't drunk, then it ain't Christmas. Cause I ain't never anything but broke. Now every year the malls are just a madhouse, full of empty pockets, thoughts, and smiles. Just the smell of eggnog makes me vomit, and those colored lights are fucking infantile. I think we collectively as a people should rise against this corporate jolly noise and tell the world let's buy some peace and quiet for a change before we spend it all on fucking toys. Ah! So if I ain't drunk, then it ain't Christmas. You know where to stick those jingle bells. If I ain't hammered, then it ain't Hanukkah. La 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 la, go fuck yourself. If I ain't cockeyed, it ain't Kwanzaa. Joy to the world, getting stoked. If I ain't drunk, then it ain't Christmas. So leave this goddamn Scrooge the fuck alone. Ha! Merry fucking Christmas!
Day 9, NLD's Christmas Slaycation. Here we go. Once again, as I mentioned, day 9, we have a guest in the insane asylum. Bobby, how are you, sir?
Doing well, friend. How you doing?
Hey, man. Good. And you've never seen the movie that we're going to talk about. And, well, we'll just get into that. SJ, how are you, sir? My partner in horror crime.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm a little depressed after watching this movie, honestly.
It is. It's depressing. And this is not going to be a, long review because, for one, it's a bad movie and you shouldn't fucking watch it. And I'm going to tell you what movie it is here in, because I didn't have all my stuff up. SJ, what are we watching this week?
We're checking out a 1972, I'm going to put the word horror in quotes, flick here called Silent Night, Bloody Night. But it also goes by a couple of other titles. I think the version that that we watched is actually the 1981 re-release. And even the title card calls it Death House.
Death House, yes.
So that's always a good way to start.
So it's not, it's not a good start, man. I mean, you know, if you're going to watch this movie, okay, all of a sudden they change the title on you.
Well, they changed it 1 year after, or the same year it came out in 72. It was also billed as Night of the Dark Full Moon.
Which still is, not going to help. Still a shitty movie.
Yeah. And then, as I said, the version that we're watching, the one that's free on YouTube, because this has become a public domain movie, is known as Death House. So,
Death House.
Yeah. Not as good as it sounds.
It's really not. But Bobby seems like he's itching to say something over here, and I'm not sure what he could possibly say, because I'm going to tell everyone right now, even before you get into, you're the only one of us three, SJ, who has actually made it through the entire movie. How many days did it take you?
It took me a good 2-3 days. I think I started watching this thing on Thursday night. And, yeah, it's one of those ones. The movie is so slow. Even the characters, when they're just acting in scenes, let's say somebody's opening a drawer. They open it in, like, half speed. It's like, hurry the fuck up with
the movie.
That's
the whole movie.
It's so slow and it's so dry. There's no emotion really anywhere. There's no humor. It's just straight up late 60s, early 70s kind of bland cinema.
It is. It really is. And, you know, I tried to watch it 3 times. And this is no lie. I'm not exaggerating. I get 15 minutes into this movie and I'm asleep.
Literally. Literally asleep.
It is a snooze fest. Bobby's already said he's not even going to try and watch this. But if you're having trouble getting to sleep, I highly suggest this movie.
Kidding? This is the best movie I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. This is better.
Best movie I've never
seen. Movie's better than Ambien.
Right. Better than Ambien. So, give us a brief rundown, SJ, of the plot, and we'll let our fellow dreadheads make their own decision.
Okay, and I will toss out a skull rating at the end of this thing, but basically this movie starts off on Christmas Eve in 1950. There's a guy, Wilford Butler, who owns this mansion that also doubled as an insane asylum, oddly enough.
Go figure.
So the first scene in the first scene in the movie, we see this guy Wilfred leave the house through the front door or mansion, and he's completely engulfed in flames. And it's actually a pretty impressive burn scene, because
it's intense. I will give it that. I actually had a little bit of high hopes for it at that point.
Right. Same here. But so he wanders out into the snow and, you know, dies in a fire. He just burns to death. That's the first scene. And so flash forward 20 years later, this 1970s, the movie is set. There's a lawyer who's coming into town to try and sell this place. Apparently the guy Wilfred willed the house to his son Jeffrey. He didn't want anybody to touch the mansion at all, leave it exactly the way it was at the time of his death.
So Jeffrey was the caretaker then.
No, Jeffrey is the
Well, he was his son, but he was also kind of the caretaker, right?
Right, but he never really lived there. That's the thing. He was off in California. Yeah, which gets revealed later on. So unless I miss something.
No, trust me. I'm pretty sure that's what I'd add to this film.
So this lawyer comes into town because Jeffrey he doesn't want a part of it anymore. He's got a lot of bad memories from his life. He doesn't want anything to do with the house. So all in the world he wants for the house is $50,000. And this is a big mansion, expansive mansion. They had an asylum, as I mentioned earlier, you know, in the basement, I think, of this place. So yeah. All he wants is 50 grand, but he wants it in cash, and he wants it the very next day. So his lawyer goes to this little town, what's it called? East Willard, Massachusetts.
And sounds goes like a and meets, great redneck town.
Oh, it's like in the movie, it's portrayed as just this kind of podunk little town and not much going on. No, you know, entertainment to be had, just a boring town. Again, everything about the movie is boring. So the lawyer comes and meets with representatives of this town. It's the sheriff. And the owner of the local newspaper and the lady who runs the phone switchboard and one other guy. I missed somebody there.
I'm sure he was boring as well.
Yeah, they're all just, one of the guys can't even speak.
He just rings a bell.
He rings a bell. Yeah, he had a laryngectomy. So he can't speak and just rings a bell whenever he's got something to say. But then he doesn't say anything. He's kind of like Garfield, but everybody kind of gets what he says when he rings the bell. Like, oh, nice point.
Like Garfield without the voice.
Right. No you know, thought bubble or anything. But so the lawyer goes and meets these guys, proposes this thing to them. They're all kind of they hate this place. They hated the guy who owned it, Wilfred Butler. He's kind of a pariah in the town, even though he's supposedly dead, which turns out to be not quite true. Ooh, but I'm not going to spoil this terrible movie for anybody. If you do,
why not? It spoils itself.
Because I don't really want to go through this entire plot. It's just fucking too fucking much. I don't even want to relive it, man. I'm traumatized.
All right, okay.
This,
all right. You can end it whenever you want, brother. I don't want to put you through it. End it whenever you want and give a fucking skull rating or contact the producers and tell them they owe you a skull.
That's a bad movie right there.
Yeah, Bobby hasn't even seen it.
I never will. Yeah,
you don't need to. But so the lawyer makes the offer for $50,000 for the house. All the townspeople kind of want to get rid of it anyway. So they pretty much agree to do it. And they're going to go to the bank and get the $50,000 cash by noon the next day. Lawyer leaves. He goes and spends the night at this place with his assistant slash mistress. And
yes.
You can kind of probably guess where that goes. They end up going up to bed to fuck. And they get brutally murdered by an axe-wielding maniac who we don't see. You know, we kind of some point-of-view shots. And then a pretty good gory double kill in bed with some blood that actually looks like blood.
It really did, man. That was one of the first things, man. When you see her hand grab the headboard, the post on the headboard or whatever, that blood looked real.
It did. They might have even used like pig's blood or something. I don't know. But that was a good looking kill. You don't see a lot of the actual hacking. You just kind of see kind of psycho style close-ups and
what you're trying to say is this is the best part of the movie.
It's the best part of the movie. It's definitely the best kill in the movie.
Can we get back
a lot of
the
other ones either happen off screen or just are really quick.
Was the sex scene really hot? I mean, is she hot?
No. Well, she was kind of hot. She was pretty decent.
Wasn't bad. I mean, other than, you know, looks, I mean, acting wasn't all there, but.
Oh, no, yeah, she's a definite Stepford Wife in this movie. She's the swooning over her boyfriend slash boss, kind of just useless Barbie doll character.
All right, well,
she's pretty attractive.
So far for me hearing this, that's the best part of the movie so far.
Yeah, well, I would say that, but this is another one of those fucking movies that we've been talking about during this slaycation where it wants to show tits so bad.
But it
just for
doesn't.
Whatever reason. This is 1972. They could have showed us a side boob or something. We get nothing.
Nothing.
We get that bullshit where you see her taking her bra off from the back and you're like, oh, here we go. At least we're going to get some boobs in this movie. And then no, the next scene, we get the lawyer who's about to go fuck her, taking his shirt off and showing his old man tits.
Right.
You know, he's not some like hot stud actor.
And she's
guy.
All he's covered up in what looks like some kind of a fur jacket or blanket or something. You remember that?
I'm sure.
That's fucking
I'm sure
hot.
A gift from him.
You say man boobs? Man.
Jesus man Christ.
He's actually in pretty good shape for his age. He looks to be around, I don't know, maybe in his early 50s in this flick, but.
But
if
you were behind him and you were pounding the brown, you could reach around.
Oh, my God.
And
this is the best part of
booby.
This podcast.
I mean, you could.
Yeah, you could grab.
I mean, he's
you
got
could grab
tip,
onto
right?
a little bit of peck.
All right. Well, so far I'm intrigued about the movie. Keep going.
Yeah, don't lie to me, sir. I know when I'm being lied.
Oh, he's not lying.
All right. So, you know. Now we got the lawyer and his mistress dead in the bed, and we get the killer going to pick up the phone to call the sheriff. And in that creepy kind of tone they always use when they call the sheriff in these kind of movies, he says that his name is Marianne. He's pretending to be somebody named Marianne, who we'll find out about later in the movie, and basically calls for assistance, but in a creepy way. He doesn't say what's going on. He doesn't say there's a murder that's taking place. He's just trying to get the sheriff to come over to this place. So let's see what the fuck happens after this in this fucking stupid ass fucking movie.
Nothing.
Yeah, there's a, okay. So Jeffrey Butler, the son, comes to the mansion to meet with the lawyer, but place is all locked. It looks like it's empty. He goes to the mayor's house and he meets his daughter, who turns out to be the survivor girl in this movie, the last person to make it out of this place alive. And so, you know, Jeffrey, the son, is looking for his lawyer. So she redirects him to go to the sheriff's office. They go over there. Sheriff's not there. Meanwhile, the sheriff is out on his way to the mansion and stops off because he sees a light in the local cemetery. And it happens to be a flashlight that's just left on the gravestone, or by the gravestone, of Wilfred Butler, the original owner, the guy that burned to death in the first scene. And on his grave, there finds the old man's diary. But before he can take a look at it, he's killed, I guess, by the same killer with a shovel. It's just a quick kill, nothing special, no gore or anything. Really a cheesy off-camera kill. So they can't find the sheriff. Jeffrey goes back to the mayor's house, talks to the daughter again. She tells him about this creepy guy that's calling in, called himself Marianne. And blah, 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 blah. Let me just wrap this whole thing up. Let me wrap this whole thing up. So what ends up happening is this Marianne character, the killer, has been calling all of those people that the lawyer met with there in one of the first scenes. You know, there if the guy who can't speak and rings the bell and the everybody else that was there. So he's slowly calling them all over to the mansion. And basically the reason for that is that the killer in this movie is Wilfred. He didn't die in 1950. That was just somebody he doused with gasoline and set ablaze, and then he kind of just went off and went crazy, and he's been in a mental institution the whole time. That is explained a little bit very early in the movie. You have some news of an escaped inmate. But this guy's 80 fucking years old now, or some, you know, in his 80s, I think. And turns out that Marianne was his daughter who had been raped, and the child that was born is Jeffrey. So it's not really Wilfred's kid at all. He's a rape baby, this our main male character in this movie. So it's all super convoluted. So it turns out that it's the dad that's calling all these people back. And the reason he's doing this and killing everybody is because he was pissed off about the way that the other people ran the asylum from that mansion. And so one night he lets all the inmates out, and the inmates go into the mansion, the main part of the mansion, and kill everybody. They're having like a Christmas party. The inmates kill everybody in there, and you know, it's kind of vindictive on Wilfred's part because he hates all his coworkers there at the asylum. So he wants to get back at them by releasing these inmates, and he knows that they're all going to go in there and kill all these rich people that help him run the asylum. And they do, but they also end up killing Marianne in the process because they mistake her as, you know, one of them. And so it turns out that these inmates just kind of wander off after massacring everybody that night. And this was back in the 30s when that part of the movie happened. And these inmates wander off after killing everybody and become the people that we saw meeting with the lawyer. So one of the inmates becomes the sheriff. One of them becomes the guy that runs the newspaper, you know, the guy with the bell. One of them becomes the switchboard operator. And so these are all former psychiatric patients that now run this town. And this is the 80-year-old Wilfred coming back to kill them all off because he's escaped from the asylum. And so that's basically what happens. There's a standoff.
Okay,
between...
well, here's the thing, SJ. I hate to, you know, cut you off. I know you're probably relieved, but here's the thing. When you explain that, if done right, that sounds like a movie I would be so fucking into.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if it was done right, it is kind of an interesting plot. It is kind of
it really is.
The flashback sequences were kind of creepy just because they were set in this weird, scratchy, sepia tone kind of way. But the whole movie is like listening to your grandfather tell you read you a really boring book when you're a kid or something to get you to go to sleep. And that's exactly what it did to you, right? It put you straight out.
It did. Yes.
Yeah.
It was a bedtime story. Put hilarious, me right the fuck out.
Hilarious in the sense that the killer is, by all accounts, too old to be able to swing a fucking axe around and shit. Like, this guy's in his fucking 80s.
Yeah, I didn't make it that long. So, you know, I'm listening to, you know, you describe the plot, and I'm like, God damn, maybe I should have watched it. But I already know the first 15 minutes of it put me to sleep.
Right. So at the very end, let me just give you the ending here.
Okay.
So Jeffrey has by now read this diary that eventually finds its way into his hands. So he gets his whole backstory. He knows that he's a rape baby and that his father is still alive. And he puts two and two together and figures out that he is the guy that escaped from the asylum that's been on the news. And so there's this climactic confrontation at the very end where the sheriff faces off with Jeffrey. They both take a shot at each other at the same time. They both die. So Jeffrey dies. The sheriff dies. All the main characters are dead now except for the mayor's daughter. And as she's in hysterics over all these dead bodies, here comes the 80-year-old man coming down the stairs. And she goes and grabs a gun from one of the dead guys and shoots old Wilfred. He finally bites the bullet. And so everybody's dead except for the mayor's daughter. And flash forward, last scene. It's a year later. And she's watching as the bulldozer crew comes through to demolish the mansion once and for all. So there you go.
That's a Silent horrible, night, horrible fucking movie. It sounds like a great plot, as I mentioned. Bobby, you were chomping at the bits, to say. And thank you, SJ, for giving us that in-depth plot review. Because there was nothing. As I mentioned in the beginning, I believe, you were the only one who had any kind of information about this. It put me to sleep three times. Bobby has not watched this movie. So, Bobby, what did you think? Hearing the plot, what's your thoughts?
Sounds like every Netflix horror movie to me. Shit.
Sounds like, what was that? A Netflix every horror
Netflix
movie?
Netflix horror movie, man. It puts too much emphasis on unnecessary characters. That's my biggest pet peeve with any movie nowadays. It takes too long, or it's just uninteresting characters. I don't know.
Oh, definitely.
I definitely wouldn't watch it. But then again, I wouldn't watch 9 out of 10 horror movies these days.
It's hard. We talked about this, SJ and myself, about, shit, because that's what he's saying after every line. Shit.
Shit. Having a mind, shit.
But
you know what? I think that listening to that, they could have, the dude with the man tits, they could have built off of that. They could have made some psycho that had like a man tit fetish killing everybody. I think that would have been great. Or actually just made the whole thing about man tits.
That sounds like a trauma. That sounds like a trauma idea.
Well, I'm really starting to get the man tits going on me. So, anything that any way I can rep my set.
Oh my god!
If I can get a group of man tit guys together and have like man tits anonymous,
like Meatloaf from Fight Club.
Oh man, yeah, those are some gargantuan man tits.
Some honkers,
man.
The only other interesting thing I even could come up with about this movie is that one of the producers of it is Lloyd Kaufman, fucking president of Troma Films, I don't know how familiar you guys are with them, but
I'm not.
Toxic Avenger and all those kind of like schlocky exploitation movies from the 70s and 80s, and even now they're still making them. But I thought I found that interesting because this does not have any of his usual fingerprints on it. It's fucking so boring. God damn.
Okay, so, skulls. Let's hand out some fucking NLD skulls. What does SJ give this movie?
I'm going to give this one, oh God, man. I'm going to give it a, you know what? I'm going to give it half a skull because as boring and dry and tedious as it is to get through, it did at least leave me feeling something. And not just because I was bored and wishing I was doing something else, but because the flick actually does have a tone to it. It's sad. There's this fucking instrumental version of Silent Night that plays throughout the whole thing. That's just the most fucking depressing thing I've ever fucking heard. It's got this weepy violin kind of thing going to it. And it, by the end of it, when the credits roll, you're just like, ugh, God damn, that movie made me feel bad. So at least it made me feel something. That earns half a skull from SJ. Check it out if you're a masochist.
Okay, well, I'll say I think it owes me a skull. I haven't even watched it, like, all the way through. But I think that if, you know, you need to feel something, feel bad, you can always give me a call, SJ. I know I have to ask Bobby, although he hasn't watched it all the way through either. He hasn't even seen the beginning, nothing of this movie. But he is here in the insane asylum, so I have to ask. Bobby, on your, you know, hearing accounts...
Shit.
What do you think you would give this skull without even watching?
All you need to do is say man tits, five.
Man tits. Five skulls from Bobby for the man tits. I'm sorry. I have to apologize to all the dreadheads, you know, for, you know, having to not really have much to say about this movie other than you, SJ. You actually suffered through this, man. You are quite the insane asylum soldier.
I am, man. I'm proud to be earning my stripes. I'll slog through any shitty movie to fucking throw some skulls at it.
Yeah, I watched Open House all the way through. That was pretty bad.
Haven't seen that one.
Oh, you don't. Yeah, don't.
it's one of those, not a Christmas movie, but it was one of those. Hey, you know what? We put out such a bad movie. We feel if you keep listening, fellow dreadheads, you will get a bonus with special guest Bobby.
Oh, no.
That's right. Off the air right now, we're going to talk to you tomorrow. Have a good night.
Thank you for fucking listening to a fucking Christmas show. All of you dirty dreadheads, let somebody fucking know. All of the other podcasts, they can go and fuck right off. Otis and fucking SJ, the shit is really fucking boss. Plenty more good flicks to see, yeah, we'll cover those. Murders, geeks, and lots of shrieks, and all of Santa's ho-ho-hos and freaks. Thank you for fucking listening, we think you all are really cool. Be nothing without you, cause horror fans fucking rule. Yeah, horror fans fucking rule. I said horror fans fucking rule. Fuck yeah.